You're listening to the Ink and Paint Folk Podcast, a look at animation through the women and non-binary folk who make it. I'm your host, Cassie Soliday, and today we're speaking with storyboard supervisor and director, Corinne Charlebois. Corinne has been drawing since she could hold a crayon, and her favorite subjects were the cartoons on TV. She originally started working in animation in 1996 doing storyboard cleanup and revisions, moving up to storyboard artist, and today she's a supervisor and director and has worked on 40 different properties and counting. In this episode, she'll share her incredible journey with us, what it's like to work in Montreal, Quebec, Canada, how she fell into teaching storyboarding, and how she deals with burnout to rekindle her artistic passion. So grab a beverage of your choice, sketch while you listen if you like, and enjoy.
Hi, my name is Corinne Charlebois. I'm a storyboard supervisor, assistant director, storyboard teacher, storyboard artist. I do all the things storyboard in animation. I'm based in Montreal, Quebec. And the thing I love about animation is just the immense possibility of what you can actually bring to the screen, the stories you can tell. I am all about story. And that's what makes me passionate. It's telling stories with pictures. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes I hear in like talks and stuff, like character is king, but also story is king. Like, what do you think?
I think character brings story.
I agree.
You can't have a good story if you don't have a compelling character. And the whole thing about a story, is that you have to have something as an audience member, you have to have something to relate to, something that compels you, that you look at the character and you either recognize yourself in the character or you recognize someone you know in the character. And that's what brings the attachment. And seeing this character want something, go for something, fail or succeed, and you're either rooting for them or you're angry at the character for not making the choices that you would make. That's what makes a good story. It's like the audience's involvement in what's happening to the character. Mm-hmm. This is why I like stories that are about character development a lot more than stories that are about fantastic settings. You know, the setting can be there, but it's there, you know, it's beautiful and gorgeous and there's lots of stuff that can be fun to look at, but if there's no story, there's no character to follow and see evolve, what's the point?
Yeah, with like 11 minute episodes, like the storytelling is so condensed, especially on a show that is episodic, where like there's like this reset button at the end where like nothing kind of goes into the next episode. So like, what are your thoughts on character development in that sense?
I like the shows with reset button. I like them less. Especially working on shows like that, I have less fun because my whole thing is, you know, I like to see a character learn and fail and succeed and have experiences and actually grow from these experiences. So yeah, I will work on shows where there's no character development really, but they're not as fun for me.
Mm. Yeah. And like in those instances, like how do you find the fun to keep your interest and, you know, have a good work day?
Well, if the stuff that's happening in the single episode is good, if the experiences of the characters are fun, I was telling this to my students, the basic way to create a story is that you have a character who wants something, but there's something that's in their way. So they do something to solve the situation, but there's something else that happens that prevents them from doing this. And you continue your story building that way until you get to a satisfying resolution. If you don't have the but, then there's no fun to have in a story. Even if you hit the reset button at the end, there needs to be a fun conflict that makes it interesting to work on the story and that you know the audience is going to enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, we're going to get into the Wayback Machine, time travel to your childhood. So give us your origin story. Like, did you always live in Montreal? And when did animation pop up for you?
Okay. Once upon a time, there was a little girl who picked up a crayon and couldn't stop drawing. And she drew and drew and drew and drew and drew. And then she went to school and wanted to become a veterinarian. And then she figured out that all this theory that she was learning was not as fun as the hands-on experience of, you know, the biology and the science that she had in high school when in more advanced schooling wasn't as fun because it was all theory. And everybody around her said, you draw so well, you should do something with your drawing. So, not knowing that animation was actually possible where she lived in Montreal, she decided to go into advertising. And because she thought animation was done by elves in Japan and California. And so she ended up trying to get into advertising, ended up studying marketing. And at her very last semester of her marketing, bachelor's of business administration and marketing, she learned that Disney was opening studios in Toronto and Vancouver.
Ooh.
Oh my God. The light bulb, the moment, the fireworks. So she ended up making an application and sending it there. And then they sent her what, in retrospect, she realized was a storyboard test. And she did the test and had to do goofy poses of Goofy getting a phone call and then urgently hanging up the phone and leaving the office, but getting tangled in the phone cord and falling splat on the ground. And sent it in. And then Disney sent a rejection letter, but the most encouraging rejection letter you could get. It said, basically, you're not there yet. Work a little more and apply later. From that moment on, that little girl decided that animation was where she was going to go. And she went and talked to people and tried to get art jobs. Ended up working on storyboard cleanup for an independent storyboard artist who then that storyboard artist introduced her to directors in studios in Montreal. And that's when that little girl became a woman who was working on Arthur back in 1997. And so that's when my career started. I was working as a storyboard revisionist on Arthur, and the rest is history.
That is amazing. You are the first person ever on this podcast to see the origin story in third person, and it was delightful. But also, like, that's over 25 years, right? That you've been working in animation. That's incredible. Congratulations. Yeah. What a marathon. That's incredible.
So, yeah,
it's been a struggle to stay in less than 10 years. So, like, oh my God.
Well, the industry is an industry of feast and famine. So when I started doing storyboard cleanup in 96, I was working on a show called Ivanhoe. And then I got to work in studio on Arthur. And while I was on Arthur doing storyboard revisions, then I did, when the storyboards were done, I did some layout, post-board layout. I did some background cleanup. I tried to get background design job at that point, but then the productions were ending, so I ended up being laid off. So then I ended up being what do I do? There are no jobs in any of the studios right now, so I ended up going taking office jobs, becoming a receptionist, becoming a secretary or things like that for a while, until there was a new opening. And then I worked on Sagwa, the Chinese Siamese cat. And that was a beautiful show. I loved it. And people come up to me at conventions and they go, oh, I remember Sagwa. That was my childhood. I loved that show. I loved it too. I love that show. And then it was like, I worked on Sagwa. Things are going well. I did like animation. Oh no, I worked on Mega Babies. Then I worked on Sagwa. And then it was like, things are going well. And then nothing happening. So work other jobs, and then a new show pops up, and then I do storyboards on a new show, and then nothing happens. So it's been a very up and down type of industry and type of experience for me until about, I would say around 2012 was when I really was working full time in storyboards. 2012 and on, and then from 2017 became a storyboard supervisor, and then it's been like nonstop. And I had started teaching 4 years ago, so I'm doing that as well as working as a storyboard supervisor and assistant director. But
that's a lot.
A long while to get to where I am.
Yeah, that's amazing. I don't think people talk enough about the in-between jobs, like just getting like an admin job somewhere, or like going, like I used to work at Starbucks, and sometimes during, dry spells, I'm like, maybe I'll go back, because it is hard. And sometimes it takes a while to get the next thing. During, negotiations last year for the union, like a lot of people were being very honest on Twitter about how tough it was to find the next gig and how they would take other work. So anyone who is in the situation, it is totally understandable. Don't feel bad or like you're a failure, because it just ups and downs, like you said.
I mean, we have to pay our rent. We have to eat. We have to live. So if you have to take another job in the meantime, you know, if you're an artist, do commissions on the side. If you're a writer, you can blog and try to monetize your blog or something like that. There's always Patreon or Kickstarter or Indiegogo or Ko-fi or things like that to try and stay in the art making business and earn a little bit from there. Like currently I'm doing blank covers for the Gargoyles comics and selling them on eBay, and that's helping me right now in between jobs. So that's
I love that. I see the Gargoyle toys behind you on your bookshelf, yes. And it's amazing. Very cool. One of the other things that you mentioned in your origin story also was how like you had been proactive and went to meet with people to learn as much as you could before you got in, and kind of help you navigate to know what you should work on or improve or like prepare yourself for opportunity. Yeah. Right. And now you're mentoring a new generation and mm-hmm. helping them do the same thing. Like, how does that feel to be able to like take everything you've done and kind of like pass it forward?
This is a calling. It's definitely something that I got to a certain point and it was like, I've learned a lot, but I need to bring other people into this. I love what I do. So it's obviously because I love what I do, I want to share it with everybody. And if I find other people who like this kind of stuff, it's like, oh, come, I will show you all the things. So, mentoring was the first thing I did, and I had a lot of fun. One of the people I mentored, I got him hired on a show that I was working on recently, and it was great to see him like from his beginnings and trying to get into Sheridan College, and he ended up going to Seneca College in Toronto, and is now, like, he's an accomplished animator and storyboard artist, a storyboard revisionist, and he's going to go far. But it's like, I was there to just, pick him up and give him that push. towards that. And it feels so fantastic. And when
That's amazing.
Teach my students in my class, I can spot, okay, this person has potential. The reason why I went to teach is because I also, you know, I know that there's a lack of storyboard artists, especially where I am, and I'm trying to mold the next generation and trying to grab people and saying, hey, you're good. Come to my studio. So that kind of stuff, or, you know, figuring out that this person is better with backgrounds, and then I can guide them towards that kind of direction and use that kind
of
stuff.
I love that.
It's the whole, you take someone who has potential and you give them the tools and you give them the push to say, go, you can do it.
That's a really great point that, like, if you mentor, then you're just training your next hire as well. Because now, like, you're a supervisor. You got to think about that thing, you know, about those things. You've worked a long time. So can you give us your highlight reel of favorite projects? Like, really wow us.
Okay. I will definitely mention again Sagwa the Chinese Siamese Cat. Because I love that show, especially because it came at a moment where it was a pretty show at the time of Ren and Stimpy and Cow and Chicken, and just, you know, cartoons were gross.
Yeah.
And they were ugly drawings. And then I worked on this kitten in China with her brother and sister, and, you know, it was just beautiful. So that is definitely on my highlights reel. I also worked on My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic. I worked on 3 seasons of that show. And this was, okay, my advice, go on LinkedIn, put your profile on LinkedIn, and then say what you've done on LinkedIn. And then somebody from a studio can find you and then call you and say, hey, we're looking for storyboard artists. We'd like to have more women as storyboard artists for this specific show. And then I took the call and they said, yeah, we want you to be on My Little Pony. And I fell off my chair and I was like, yes. So definitely make a profile on LinkedIn. It's a very good place to find jobs.
I love it. And My Little Pony is so just joy. I love it so much. That must have been really fun.
It was so much fun. And it wasn't just fun because of the show itself. The whole process, the fact that I was paired up with another storyboard artist, it was always the same storyboard artist, so it was a team of 2. And we could, you know, chat back and forth and send each other images. Like, I was working from Montreal and my partner is in Vancouver. And yeah, there's a 3-hour time difference, but we were able to share and chat and send each other images. Hey, I'm doing this for this shot. And I'm going, this is the your ponies are too small for the space. They need to feel more cramped. And then she would send me stuff. And then I would, you know, we'd work together to make the show better. So there's that. But there's also that once a rough was done, we'd have a live portfolio, not portfolio, live rough review that was an all-day meeting. I zoomed in and it was an all-day meeting and we went over the episode and did notes, and it was a lot of the director and the storyboard supervisor were there and they were going like, maybe we could do this with the scene, and us storyboard artists, we could go, yes, and you do this as well, and we add to it. It was so energizing to be in a creative meeting like this, and I never had that experience before.
That sounds incredible.
And it was fantastic, and I tried to bring it into other shows that I've worked on afterwards, and it just didn't work the same way. So that kind of magic that was in My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic, I haven't been able to recreate.
Oh, but, man. When you pitch having like a partner storyboard artist on an episode, what is the reaction you get? Is it usually a budgetary reason why it doesn't happen, or what?
That's not the thing that that happens. It's mostly about the review and the communication between the storyboard artists type of thing that is missing. The the rough board review doesn't happen. The storyboard artists don't talk to each other. We have communication systems set up for the artists, but they're not necessarily using them because they're not, maybe not encouraged enough, or they're so used to working by themselves. Storyboard artists in Canada are often freelance, working from home. And, you know, in this era, this post-COVID era, there's even more of that recluse type of thing happening. So I don't know.
Why do you think that is? Like, putting the pandemic aside, why do you think that a lot of storyboard jobs in Canada are remote?
I don't have the real answer to this, but I believe it is a question of funding, a question of budget. At the time when I got my first storyboard job, I was working as an employee of the studio at Cinar doing, no, not Cinar, Cinegroup. I was doing storyboard revisions, and then I got a storyboard to do. And they said, well, while you're working with us on the storyboard, you can't be an employee. We have to put you freelance.
Right.
And you can't work in the studio because you're not going to be an employee for that period. So you have to work from home, and you can't work at the studio because taxes, insurance, funding, financing of the series, something like that. I don't know. At the time, storyboard artists were paid a lot more than storyboard revisionists. So that might have played in the balance of financing. I'm not sure. All I know is that now there are more storyboard artists that work by the hour or in-house. But it's still, for the most part, storyboard artists are still freelance working from home.
That's so wild. Just because, like, story is like... it is fun to yes and build together and like think about how to plus a scene, how to, you know, stage what's in the script and then make it so much better visually, right?
Yeah.
And it's, I find it, you know, well, I find it kind of sad. I find it really sad, the freelance model, because like a lot of writing is going freelance as well. So like you might go in to break a story with the like staff writers if they have them, but some, there's a lot of shows who don't have staff writers and it's just the story editor. And so it's just like you and a, like maybe the script coordinator like trying to break a story together, but like you don't know what the other writers are writing, and like you're just kind of going off of that little glimpse, that little glimmer of the show through your interaction with them. And it's not like they share like a ton of stuff with you. There's like a very limited amount of, you know, visual guidance or world that they share with you. And you know, when I was a staff writer, it was just so incredible to be able to see the whole process and to collaborate with the other creatives and like problem solve together just to make the project better. So like, I feel like, it, you know, there's a lot of love getting lost in, you know, in the craft.
I agree.
But yeah.
I, as a storyboard supervisor and an assistant director, I've had to work on either working on scripts that were clearly written by someone who doesn't know the show, or every time you hire a new storyboard artist, they don't know the lore of the show. They don't know the style of the show. They're missing a lot of story context information that I had to come in and fix. And I had to send notes back to the writing team to say, yeah, no, this doesn't work because in episodes 5, the dad was acting a different way. You can't have him in episode 17 acting this way. And that kind of stuff that, you know, because I had the look over the entire history of the show, and these freelancers, they don't have that. And it's the same thing if you hire freelancers to help with crunch in animation. If they don't have the history of the show, they can't, you know, produce work that is up to the standard of the show. So yeah, sometimes it's a little bit frustrating to deal with that situation. But
yeah,
I would absolutely love being in studio with a team of storyboard artists and that everybody knows what's happened in previous episodes and what's going to happen in the following ones and just work together. That would be ideal. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't happen that often.
Yeah. And this might be a good time to jump into this section that I'm really excited to talk about being a boss and like what a storyboard supervisor does. Mm-hmm. But like kind of still keeping it where you just left off, though, with you're basically the filter of all the work that's coming in to like put it into the show. You're like keeping the continuity of style of storytelling, of the quality of the show. That's a lot for one person. And of course, there are other people, but you are the supervisor. So you are that one filter of all the storyboard artists that are freelance and remote. So one thing I have seen over the years is that, like, you know, because they are freelance, because they don't have all the resources to like be like at the quality that you need them to, I've seen it where like artists will only get one chance or maybe just one. Like if they turn in something that isn't quite up to par, like maybe it's their first board, they don't get another board. You know what I mean? So like, yeah. It is so tough because most of our audience are trying, you know, they're at the start of their journey. They want to break in. Maybe they're a few years into working. So like when you only get one chance to wow them and you don't have the experience, what do you think is the most important thing to do on your first like freelance gig if you don't have access to the whole system?
I will say, as a person on the hiring side of things, I wish that productions had more time, like that they budget more time for training up new people, so that there would be more ramping up time for new people to get more guidance from people like the storyboard supervisor and things like that to say, okay, let's go over that section of board that you did and here's redlining and, you know, have a Zoom meeting with them or something like that, which is what I tried to do with a lot of my storyboard artists, to just have a meeting with them and go over these are issues and this is how you fix them. But there's often not enough time because productions are so crunched in both time and money budgets. So if you're going to do a storyboard for the first time on a show, or if you're going to do work for the first time on a show, ask your storyboard supervisor if you can send them a chunk for feedback. Like, do a first sequence and ask, can I send you this for feedback just to know if I'm in the right direction? That's a lot better than just sending the thing completely finished and then the storyboard supervisor looks at it and says, this is all wrong, we have to redo everything, and then you don't get the job again. So first go with, I have a small chunk done. Can you let me know if I'm in the right direction? That's one. If you get the thanks but no thanks, ask what was not up to your standards, what can I do to improve? They might not have a lot of time to give you because they're super busy with everything, but it is very appreciated to have someone who's interested in doing good work. So it might be, it might make the difference between never hire this person again and this person is not ready, but they can, they have potential, they could be ready later. They might offer you, if there's room on their production, they might say, well, you're not quite up to the task for storyboard, but we do have a spot open in storyboard revision if you'd like to go in. And that's a way to actually build up your experience and have direct contact with the storyboard supervisor who can help you and guide you and make you a better storyboard artist through the training of storyboard revision. Anyway, that's what I'm trying to do as much as I can. It doesn't mm-hmm. always work. Sometimes there are people who are untrainable. But as much as possible, you know, ask for feedback and take the feedback in stride. This is not a criticism of you. It is a criticism of your work. This is given to make your work better and, you know, apply the notes that you get so that you do better the next time.
Yeah, take self-worth out of it completely because you are worthy. It's about the work.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so trying to figure out how to phrase this next question because, like, something you said, you know, if, like, they say your work isn't up to the quality we need and they don't mention a revisionist opportunity, can, like, you follow up with that? Or, okay.
You can say, I really like this show. I would like to be able to continue working on this. Is there another place where you think I could be useful?
I love that phrasing, too.
And because we've had people on shows that I've worked on, we've had people who came in to do storyboard cleanup and their skills weren't quite up to par. And they were then tried in storyboard, prop cleanup or design or, you know, other places in the production because it's not just storyboards. There's like, it's a whole pipeline. So there might be another spot where you can fit while you up your skills to be level to do the job you actually want to do.
Right. And I know that this is something you're passionate about because, you know, when you're first getting interested in, you know, like wanting to work in animation, you mostly just know about animation jobs or, you know, maybe boarding, maybe character design. But even beyond that, there are so many other roles.
Yes.
Like, can you just talk about that?
Never diss the production assistant job.
Amen.
What's great about being a production assistant is that you get to have a hand on pretty much everything that's going on in the show. It's more organization, but I mean, we've had production assistants who were working on putting all the attributions in the storyboard. So they get to learn the structure of the storyboard and they get to learn Storyboard Pro at the same time, which is super useful. They would work with the character designers to get the characters and then be the link to the storyboard artists, send them the designs. They'd work with all the different departments. They could work on some of the assembly of animation. They could work on a whole bunch of different things. They touch everything in the pipeline, which means that at that point, you get to because you get to touch everything, you can learn for yourself what's actually attractive about the different jobs in the pipeline of animation. So that's definitely a job that is that I recommend going for. If they say your art skills aren't up to par yet, production assistant really helps. Otherwise, I mean, just from character prop, location design, cleanup, layout, rigging, if you're doing 2D or 3D, like 2D harmony animation, character rigging, color, it's colorists in animation, not just for backgrounds, but for characters, for props, color design. There's jobs in development, like not just, you know, production pipeline, but you can go in the development side of things and look if there's anything in there. I haven't looked at, I haven't had any experience in development, but I'm intrigued and I'd like to go in and look at that.
I think you'd be great in development, honestly.
I would like, have fun. And so there's like compositing and editing and sound design and just assembly. And there's so many jobs in animation. The pipeline is so big. So you're not, you know, it's not just, oh, I want to be in animation, I'm going to be an animator. Well, there's a whole bunch of people that did stuff before you get to animate. Mm-hmm. And then there's a whole bunch of people who do stuff after you animate.
Yeah. Editorial, sound design, music.
Compositing, lighting.
Yeah.
All that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Sound design. Just hearing all of this, it lights me up all over again. The process of production pipeline is like infinitely interesting. And then put people in it and then it's like amazingly sometimes dramatic. And it's a fun ride, I will say.
Yes.
There was something you said earlier that I wanted to point out, because you were talking about the system that is created on these productions to where, you know, there's not enough time to onboard new talent, especially when they're freelance, even when they're in-house, sometimes like launch you on a board on your first day and you have to get it done in like 4 to 6 weeks, depending on the show and how long, how much time there is. So like if like anyone fails on their first try, because like I've known some people who have like gotten this opportunity and kind of, you know, this is probably the worst thing I could say, but fell on their face, you know, because it was just intense. And it's not that they weren't talented. It was that they weren't supported or given the tools to succeed. And that is a systematic problem. That's not about your self-worth or your talent. I don't know if you have anything to add to that, but I just find that that's one of the, like, you know, the disappointing things about jumping into, you know, this world, especially in the beginning, into those roles.
Yeah. Often, that's the thing about having experience, is you forget about what it's like to be a beginner. So you kind of get new people in, you go, hey, come on in, let's get you started. Here's your job, here's your widgets, and make the widgets. And the person I've never seen widgets like this before. And they're too shy or too self-conscious or too afraid to lose their job to ask any questions. So it's both on the leadership to be prepared to guide newbies, and on the newbies to say, hey, I need guidance. So I've been guilty of, you know, having a new artist come in and say, this is how you do the job, and go. And because I trusted that they would be able to, but I forgot that there were certain things that I take for granted that they have no idea what they are.
Mm-hmm.
And this person, and I'm saying this because this person was so nervous about losing their job that they didn't come and ask any questions because they didn't want to seem incompetent. And they fell flat on their face because of that. And we had to let them go because they didn't actually show the initiative to say, hey, I need some help here. This is not, you know, this is not working for me because this is not how I'm supposed to, like, I don't know any of this stuff. And if they had come to me and said, I need help, then I would have said, oh, I'm so sorry, I should have told you about all of this. And then I would have given them the help they need for them to succeed.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, definitely ask for what you need. I feel so bad having introduced fell on their face into the conversation. It is
a valid thing, and it does happen.
And that's what it feels like, having done it before.
Yeah, it's important to talk about it because everybody falls on their face at some point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's not pretty, nor does it feel good. Okay, so being a boss, on your journey, how did you advocate for yourself to move up?
I had been a storyboard artist for a long time. And the reason why I stayed storyboard artist is because I had two children in elementary school. And at one point, my youngest was getting old enough, like he was about to start high school. And I said, yeah, that itching that I have to go into studio to, instead of just touch every few individual episodes in a series, I'd like to have a view on the entire series. I'd love to move up to storyboard supervisor. I learned after the fact, I was working on Martha Speaks, and the director there wanted me to work in the studio. And I said, I can't, I live too far away. My children are very small. I don't want them to spend 12 hours in daycare. That's not fair to them. And I refused the job. What I didn't know was that he didn't want me to be a storyboard artist in studio. He wanted me to be the storyboard supervisor. But he hadn't said that. So I missed out on that through that little bit of miscommunication. But even then, when he told me that this was a job that he wanted me to have, it kind of dawned on me that this is the kind of thing that I will be able to look for once my kids were old enough. So when I got to that point, I contacted the studio that I was working for, Oasis Animation. I was working on Arthur. So I said, I'd like to, if you have an opening, I'd like to do storyboard supervision. And they contacted me a little bit later to say, our current storyboard supervisor is moving up to direct another show. So that job would be open if you'd like to come and interview. So I definitely did. So I went to interview and it went really well. Got the email back saying, yes, we'd like to offer you the job at a fraction of the rate that you're getting as a storyboard artist. And I went, that's too little money. And they said, well, we can't do much about that. We could maybe give you a little bit more. And at that point, I'm like, I'm going to stay a storyboard artist because you're cutting my pay way too much. And so I contacted my friend who wanted to hire me on Martha Speaks and talked to him about wages for that kind of job. And he said, yeah, no, don't accept that. That's too low. The director of Arthur contacted me and said, I heard you refuse the job. I said, yes, because they offered me too little money. And he said, you should have come to me beforehand. And he went and he fought for me. And they came back to me saying, well, we're kind of stuck. We're going to, you know, let's see if we can make a deal. So I accepted a pay cut with a promise of an increase later. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I was going from freelance to employee. So that means I got the benefits of, you know, the entrance in from the studio. Our situation in Canada is completely different than that in the States. We have universal health care, so we don't have like that. Having that insurance is more for the extra stuff, like going to see a physiotherapist, massage therapist, eye doctor. Those kinds of things are more covered by private insurance than by Medicare. But we have the equivalent of Medicare here for everybody. So health issues are not as much a concern. But even then, you know, I became an employee at that point, proved myself as a storyboard supervisor, and then just continued getting those kinds of jobs at that studio and other studios as well. So that was like I advocated for myself, but I also held my ground when they offered me, when the offer was not enough. I held my ground. I said, no, I'm not taking this. I'll continue being a storyboard artist. Mm-hmm. I learned after the fact that there was an argument at the studio about me taking on that job because I was too valuable as a storyboard artist. If I took the storyboard supervision job, then they would lose me as a storyboard artist. And that would make it difficult for them by proving myself as a good storyboard supervisor. I made them see my value as something else than what I'd been pigeonholed as for 20 years. Mm-hmm. And now I'm trying to get out of the Kerinda's great storyboards to go and direct. And that's hard. It's an ongoing fight.
Yeah. Everyone wants to label us and pigeonhole us because that's what makes sense to them.
Yeah. They don't see you as a person that has goals and aspirations. They see you as a person who does this thing really well. And we should keep them in that role because they do it really well. It's not because they're mean or anything like that. It's just this person is useful in that role. So we plan on having this person in that role for as long as we can.
Mm-hmm. So how do you kind of plan on de-pigeonholing yourself? Like, what are your thoughts on moving forward to directing?
I have actually, I have a conversation coming up with the head of the studio to discuss the fact that I want to move on to directing and that I'm not seeing that opportunity open up at the studio where I am. I want to ask her what her plans are and if there is something, you know, lined up for me in there. And I probably will need to move on to another studio and see if I can find opportunities elsewhere in studios where they don't necessarily know me as a storyboard artist. So I have less chance of being pigeonholed as a storyboard artist. However, mm-hmm. I have a CV that is this long, full of storyboard jobs. So I'm pretty much stuck.
Yeah, audience can't see it, but Corinne just like open arms, really long, really long list of titles. So that must feel very risky. Like, how are you managing, like, if any is coming up for you, like any feelings of anxiety?
It's the uncertainty is never fun. Anxiety is a problem for me. I try to cope with it in different ways. But for the most part, I am trying to reason with myself that I can do a lot of things in between animation jobs. And if I'm not working in animation, I can do those side jobs, as we mentioned. I can take commissions. I can do those comic book covers. I can do a bunch of other things in the meantime. I can focus more on the teaching. And this is like the mantra that's going through my head. I am not stuck. I can do other things. Besides, the animation industry is in a cycle. In Canada, a lot of the new jobs get started, new shows get started in the spring because the financing comes in January, and then that's like the go ahead, we can start production. So script writing happens and storyboards start in March, April, and then animation starts in June, July, August. So you know, if you're looking for a job, the moments where the job offers are going to come in or where you can find the openings is at a certain period of the year. So we're in January right now, which means that in a couple of months, there should be a lot more openings in storyboards. Hopefully some openings in directing and storyboard supervision and that kind of stuff. So we'll see.
Mm-hmm. I feel like that season you just presented is how it works in, you know, America as well. It's usually like, I know I end up getting like interviews in for writing in like the spring and or I guess like late winter, early spring.
Yeah.
And then sometimes in the fall.
That's pretty much when the shows start.
Yeah.
This concludes part one of my interview with Corinne Charlevoix. Tune in later this week for part two.
Ink and Paint Folk is produced in partnership with Women in Animation, an organization dedicated to advancing women in the field of animation and reaching 50-50 by the year 2025. Learn more at womeninanimation.org. This episode was produced by me with the magic of the internet. Music by Dominique Parker and edited by Mae Murphy. All opinions expressed here are our own and do not represent those of our respective employers. Until next time, this has been the Ink and Paint Folk Podcast. Stay colorful.